Episode 10. Flatland, A Romance of Many Dimensions, by Edwin Abbott Abbott, read by David Grizzly Smith. Part 2, Other Worlds. Section 19. How, though the sphere showed me other mysteries of Spaceland, I still desired more. And what became of it? When I saw my poor brother led away to imprisonment, I attempted to leap down into the council chamber, desiring to intercede on his behalf, or at least bid him farewell. But I found that I had no motion of my own. I absolutely depended on the volition of my guide, who said in gloomy tones,
"Heed not thy brother. Haply thou shalt have ample time hereafter to condole with him. Follow me."
Once more we ascended into space.
"Hitherto,"
said the sphere,
"I have shown you naught save plane figures and their interiors. Now I must introduce you to solids, and reveal to you the plan upon which they are constructed. Behold this multiple of movable square cards. See, I put one on another, not, as you supposed, northward of the other, but on the other, now a second, and now a third. See, I am building up a solid by a multitude of squares, parallel to one another. Now the solid is complete, being as high as it is long and broad. We call it a cube."
"Well, pardon me, my lord, but to my eye the appearance is as of an irregular figure whose inside is laid open to the view. In other words, methinks I see no solid but a plane, such as we infer in Flatland, only of an irregularity which betokens some monstrous criminal, so that the very sight of it is painful to my eyes."
"True, it appears to you as a plane, because you are not accustomed to light and shade and perspective, just as in Flatland a hexagon would appear a straight line to one who has not the art of sight recognition, but in reality it is a solid, as you shall learn by the sense of feeling."
He then introduced me to the cube, and I found that this marvelous being was indeed no plane, but a solid, and that he was endowed with 6 plane sides and 8 terminal points called solid angles, and I remember the saying of the sphere that such a creature as this would be formed by a square moving in space parallel to himself, and I rejoiced to think that so insignificant a creature as I could in some sense be called the progenitor of so illustrious an offspring. But still, I could not fully understand the meaning of what my teacher had told me concerning light and shade and perspective, and I did not hesitate to put my difficulties before him. Now, were I to give the sphere's explanation of these matters, succinct and clear though it was, it would be tedious to an inhabitant of space who knows these things already. Suffice it that by his lucid statements, and by changing the position of objects and lights, and by allowing me to feel these several objects, and even his own sacred person, he at last made all things clear to me, so that I could now readily distinguish between a circle and a sphere, a plane figure and a solid. This was the climax, the paradise of my strange, eventful history. Henceforth I shall have to relate the story of my miserable fall. Most miserable, yet surely most undeserved, for why should the thirst for knowledge be aroused, only to be disappointed and punished? My volition shrinks from the painful task of recalling my humiliation, yet, like a second Prometheus, I will endure this, and worse, if by any means I may arouse in the interiors of plain and solid humanity a spirit of rebellion against the conceit which would limit our dimensions to only 2, or 3, or any number short of infinity. Away then with all personal considerations, let me continue to the end as I began, without further digressions or anticipations, pursuing the plain path of this passionate history. The exact facts, the exact words, and they are burnt in upon my brain, shall be set down without alteration of an iota, and let my readers judge between me and destiny. The sphere would willingly have continued his lessons by indoctrinating me in the conformation of all regular solids, cylinders, cones, pyramids, pentahedrons, hexahedrons, dodecahedrons, and spheres. But I ventured to interrupt him. Not that I was weary of knowledge, on the contrary. I thirsted for yet deeper and fuller draughts than he was offering me. "Pardon me," said I, "O thou whom I must no longer address as the perfection of all beauty, but let me beg thee to vouchsafe thy servant a sight of thine interior."
"My what?"
"Thine interior, thy stomach, thy intestines."
"Whence this ill-timed impertinence request? And what mean you by saying that I am no longer the perfection of all beauty?"
"Well, my lord, your wisdom has taught me to aspire to one even more great, more beautiful, and more closely approximate to perfection than yourself. As you yourself, superior to all flatland forms, combines many circles into one, so doubtless there is one above you, who combines many spheres in one supreme existence, surpassing even the solids of spaceland. And even as we, who are now in space, look down on flatland and see the insides of old things, so of a certainty there is yet above us some higher, purer region, whither thou dost surely propose to lead me. O thou whom I shall always call everywhere in all dimensions my priest, my philosopher, and friend, some yet more spacious space, some more dimensionable dimensionality, from the vantage ground of which we shall look down together upon the revealed insides of solid things, and where thine own intestines and those of thy kindred spheres will lie exposed to the view of the poor wandering exile from Flatland, to whom so much has already been vouchsafed."
"Stuff! Enough of this trifling. The time is short, and much remains to be done before you are fit to proclaim the gospel of the three dimensions to your blind, benighted countrymen in Flatland."
"Nay, gracious teacher, deny me not what I know is in thy power to perform. Grant me but one glimpse of thine interior, and I'm satisfied forever, remaining henceforth thy docile pupil, thy unemancipable slave, ready to receive all thy teachings and to feed upon the words that fall from thy lips."
"Well then, to content and silence you, let me say at once, I would show you what you wish if I could. But I cannot. Would you have me turn my stomach inside out to oblige you?"
"But my lord has shown me the intestines of all my countrymen in the land of two dimensions by taking me with him into the land of three. What, therefore, more easy than now to take his servant on a second journey into the blessed region of the fourth dimension, where I shall look down with him once more upon this land of three dimensions, and see the inside of every three-dimensioned house, the secrets of the solid earth, the treasures of the mines in space land, the intestines of every solid living creature, even of the most noble and adorable spheres."
"But where is this land of four dimensions?"
"I know not, but doubtless my teacher knows."
"Not I. There is no such land. The very idea is utterly inconceivable."
"Your lordship tempts his servant to see whether or not he remembers the revelations imparted to him. Trifle not with me, my lord. I crave, and I thirst for more knowledge. Now, doubtless we cannot see that other higher space land now, because we have no eye in our stomachs, but just as there was the realm of flatland, though the poor puny Lineland monarch could neither turn left nor right to discern it. And just as there was close at hand and touching my frame the land of three dimensions, though I, blind, senseless wretch, had no power to touch it, no eye in my interior to discern it, so of a surety there is a fourth dimension, which my Lord perceives with the inner eye of thought. And that it must exist, my Lord himself has taught me. Or can he have forgotten what he himself imparted to his servant? In one dimension did not a moving point produce a line with two terminal points? In two dimensions did not a moving line produce a square with four terminal points? In three dimensions did not a moving square produce, did not this eye of mine behold it, that blessed being, a cube with eight terminal points? And in four dimensions shall not a moving cube, alas for analogy and alas for the progress of truth, if it be not so, shall not, I say, the motion of a divine cube result in a still more divine organization with 16 terminal points? Behold the infallible confirmation of the series, 2, 4, 8, 16. Is not this a geometrical progression? Is not this, if I might quote my Lord's own words, strictly according to analogy? Again, was not I taught by my Lord that as in a line there are two bounding points, in a square there are four bounding lines, so in a cube there must be six bounding squares? Behold once more the confirming series, 2, 4, 6. Is not this an arithmetical progression, and consequently does it not of necessity follow that the more divine offspring of the divine cube in the land of four dimensions must have eight bounding cubes? And is not this also, as my Lord has taught me to believe, strictly according to analogy? Oh, my Lord, behold, I cast myself in faith upon conjecture, not knowing the facts, and I appeal to your Lordship to confirm or deny my logical anticipations. If I'm wrong, I yield, and I will no longer demand a fourth dimension. But if I am right, my Lord will listen to reason. I ask, therefore, is it or is it not the fact that ere now your countrymen have witnessed the descent of beings of a higher order than their own, entering closed rooms, even as your Lordship entered mine, without the opening of doors or windows, and appearing and vanishing at will? On the reply to this question, I am ready to stake everything. Deny it, and I am henceforth silent. Only vouchsafe an answer.
It is reported so, but men are divided in opinion as to the facts. Even granting the facts, they explain them in different ways. And in any case, however great may be the number of different explanations, no one has adopted or suggested the theory of a fourth dimension. Therefore, pray have done with this trifling. Let us return to business.
I was certain of it. I was certain that my anticipations would be fulfilled. And now, have patience with me, and answer me yet one more question, best of teachers. Those who have thus appeared, no one knows whence, and have returned, no one knows whither, have they also contracted their sections and vanished somehow into that more spacious space whither I now entreat you to conduct me?
They have vanished, certainly, if they ever appeared, but most people say that these visions arose from the thought, you will not understand me, from the brain, from the perturbed angularity of the seer.
Say they so. Oh, believe them not. Or if indeed be so, that this other space is really thought-land, then take me to that blessed region where I, in thought, shall see the insides of all solid things. There, before my ravished eye, a cube, moving in some altogether new direction, but strictly according to analogy, so as to make every particle of his interior pass through a new kind of space, with a wake of its own, shall create a still more perfect perfection than himself, with 16 terminal extra solid angles, 8 solid cubes for his perimeter. And once there, shall we stay our upward course? In that blessed region of 4 dimensions, shall we linger on the threshold of the 5th and not enter therein? Ah, no, let us rather resolve that our ambition shall soar with our corporal ascent, then yielding to our intellectual onset, the gates of the 6th dimension shall fly open. After that a 7th, and then an 8th. How long I should have continued, I know not. In vain did the sphere in his voice of thunder reiterate his commands of silence and threaten me with the direst penalties if I persisted. Nothing could stem the flood of my ecstatic aspirations. Perhaps I was to blame, but indeed I was intoxicated with the recent draughts of truth to which he himself had introduced me. However, the end was not long in coming. My words were cut short by a crash outside and a simultaneous crash inside me, which impelled me through space with a velocity that precluded speech. Down, 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 I was rapidly descending, and I knew that return to Flatland was my doom. One glimpse, one last and never-to-be-forgotten glimpse I had of that dull, level wilderness, which was now to become my universe again, spread out before my eye, then a darkness, then a final, all-consummating thunder peal. And when I came to myself, I was once more a common, creeping square, in my study at home, listening to the peace cry of my approaching wife. Section 20. How the Sphere Encouraged Me in a Vision. Although I had less than a minute for reflection, I felt by a kind of instinct that I must conceal my experiences from my wife. Not that I apprehended at the moment any danger from her divulging my secret, but I know that to any woman in Flatland the narrative of my adventures must needs be unintelligible. So I endeavored to reassure her by some story invented for the occasion that I had accidentally fallen through the trap door of the cellar and had lain there stunned. The southward attraction in our country is so slight that even to a woman my tale necessarily appeared extraordinary and well-nigh incredible. But my wife, whose good sense far exceeds that of the average of her sex, and who perceived that I was unusually excited, did not argue with me on the subject, but insisted that I was ill, and required repose. I was glad of an excuse for retiring to my chamber to think quietly over what had happened. When I was at last by myself, a drowsy sensation fell on me, but before my eyes closed I endeavored to reproduce the third dimension, and especially the process by which a cube is constructed through the motion of a square. It was not so clear as I could have wished, but I remembered that it must be upward, and yet not northward, and had determined steadfastly to retain these words as the clue which, if firmly grasped, could not fail to guide me to the solution. So, mechanically repeating, like a charm, the words upward, yet not northward, I fell into a sound, refreshing sleep. During my slumber I had a dream. I thought I was once more by the side of the sphere, whose lustrous hue betokened that he had exchanged his wrath against me for perfect placability. We were moving together towards a bright but infinitesimally small point, to which my master directed my attention. As we approached, methought there issued from it a slight humming noise, as from one of your Spaceland blue bottles, only less resonant by far, so slight indeed, that even in the perfect stillness of the vacuum through which we soared, the sound reached not our ears till we checked our flight at a distance from it of something under 20 human diagonals.
"Look yonder,"
said my guide.
"In Flatland thou hast lived. Of Lineland thou hast received a vision. Thou hast soared with me to the heights of Spaceland. Now, in order to complete the range of thy experience, I conduct thee downward to the lowest depth of existence, even to the realm of Pointland, the abyss of no dimensions. Behold yon miserable creature. That point is a being, like ourselves, but confined to the non-dimensional gulf. He is himself his own world, his own universe. Of any other than himself he can form no conception. He knows not length, nor breadth, nor height. He has had no experience of them. He has no cognizance even of the number two. Nor has he a thought of plurality, for he is himself one and all, being really nothing. Yet mark his perfect self-contentment. And hence learn this lesson, that to be self-contented is to be vile and ignorant, and that to aspire is better than to be blindly and impotently happy. Now listen."
He ceased, and there arose from the little buzzing creature a tiny, low, monotonous, but distinct tinkling, as from one of your Spaceland phonographs, from which I caught these words,
"Infinite beatitude of existence. It is, and there is none else beside it."
"What," said I, "does the puny creature mean by it?"
"He means himself,"
said the sphere.
"Have you not noticed before now that babies and babyish people who cannot distinguish themselves from the world speak of themselves in the third person? But hush."
"It fills all space,"
continued the little soliloquizing creature.
"And what it feels, it is. And what it thinks, it utters. And what it utters, that it hears. And it itself is a thinker, utterer, hearer, thought, word, audition. It is the one, and yet the all, in all. Ah, the happiness, oh, the happiness of being."
"Can you not startle the little thing out of its complacency?" said I. "Tell it what it really is, as you told me. Reveal to it the narrow limitations of Pointland and lead it to something higher?"
"That is no easy task,"
said my master.
"Try you."
Hereon, raising my voice to the uttermost, I addressed the point as follows. "Silence, silence, contemptible creature. You call yourself the all in all, but you are the nothing. Your so-called universe is a mere speck in a line, and a line is a mere shadow as compared with..."
"Hush, hush, you have said enough,"
interrupted the sphere.
"Now listen, and mark the effect of your harangue on the king of Pointland."
The luster of the monarch, who beamed more brightly than ever upon hearing my words, showed clearly that he retained his complacency, and I had hardly ceased when he took up his strain again.
"Ah, joy! The joy of thought. What can it not achieve by thinking? Its own thoughts coming to itself, suggestive of its disparagement, thereby to enhance its happiness. Sweet rebellion stirred up to result in triumph. Oh, the divine creative power of the all-in-one. Oh, the joy of being."
"You see,"
said my teacher,
"how little your words have done. So far as the monarch understands them at all, he accepts them as his own, for he cannot conceive of any other except himself, and plumes himself upon the variety of its thought as an instance of creative power. Let us leave this god of point lands to the ignorant fruition of his omnipresence and omniscience. Nothing that you or I can do can rescue him from his self-satisfaction.
After this, as we floated gently back to Flatland, I could hear the mild voice of my companion pointing the moral of my vision and stimulating me to aspire and to teach others to aspire. He had been angered at first, he confessed, by my ambition to soar to dimensions above the third, but since then he had received fresh insight, and he was not too proud to acknowledge his error to a pupil. Then he proceeded to initiate me into mysteries yet higher than those I had witnessed, showing me how to construct extra solids by the motion of solids, and double extra solids by the motion of extra solids, all strictly according to acknology, all by methods so simple, so easy, as to be patent even to the female sex. Thank you for listening to Flatland, A Romance of Many Dimensions, by A. Square, written here in Spaceland by Edwin Abbott Abbott, and read by David Grizzly Smith. Music in these recordings includes Friendly Day from Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. I do hope you'll be kind enough to comment on podiobooks.com or at grizzliesgrowls.com. And if you would, please tell others about this book, even if you are an isosceles or a woman. These recordings are released under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 license.